So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes. Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F-35A. Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview. There's a new package of HOPE bills in the Wisconsin Capitol. HOPE stands for Heroin, Opiate Prevention, and Education. There's a new package of bills to fight Wisconsin, help fight Wisconsin's addiction problems. They will be sponsored by State Representative John Nygren. He's a Republican from Marinette. He represents the 89th District. He sponsored the past HOPE agenda bills. And my other guest today is Peter Brunzell. He's the Executive Director of WisHOPE. Thank you both for coming in. Peter, WisHOPE is a fairly new, so can you give us the short version to our viewers of what your nonprofit organization does?
Sure. We provide treatment, housing, peer recovery services, and employer support in our communities.
And you're a nonprofit?
Correct.
Right. And how are organizations like WisHOPE playing an increasing role as Wisconsin addresses this problem, Representative?
Well, I think it's vital because they're the folks that are on the ground providing the services. You know how the legislature works. We're citizen legislators first and foremost. We're not experts in dealing with addiction. We work within the network and the folks that are, that do have that expertise to be able to help us craft legislation and policies that are going to be helpful in fighting addiction in Wisconsin.
Thanks. Overview question. What do we know about Wisconsin's addiction problem and how to fight it now that we didn't know 5 or 6 years ago? John, you sponsored the HOPE packages. Can you start, please?
Well, I mean, Peter might have a different answer than I do. I think, you know, I personally know the stigma that individuals with addiction face. I know that the what families face. We're still, while I think we're in a better place because of, you know, me telling my family story, we're in a better place than the state. Sometimes I think, you know, we regret maybe taking those steps because, you know, everybody's looking for a happy ending, and Cassie's story, at least to date, is not a happy ending. But you look at the where we are as a state and the improvements in that openness about addiction and having these very frank conversations, people coming forward telling their own stories, I don't think that would have happened in the past. So I think that's probably the most significant thing we know today, is that the stigma is widespread, and while we've taken steps in the right direction, we're not done.
And Peter?
I'd have to agree with Rep. Nygren. The stigma is a huge part of it, and also the obstacles. Like, what are the obstacles that are in front of somebody that is looking for help? Mm-hmm. And those are starting to be pushed down, and the HOPE agenda is a big part of that.
Talk about the evolution in the obstacles, Peter, please.
Sure. It's if somebody's looking for treatment in Wisconsin, how can they get into detox if they have a state-run insurance, any Medicaid product? How can we get them directly into residential treatment, things like that, and have it happen faster? So if they want help today, how can we get them help today?
Representative Nygren has sponsored past HOPE agendas. How have they helped organizations like yours and you, who are really fighting addiction, as John said, on the ground level? What changes have we seen as a result of the past HOPE agendas, please?
Sure. Each part of what's laying out in the HOPE agendas, especially the ones that are coming out now that I'm quite a bit familiar with. Each part of those has opened the doors in our area. Is forgetting one of the pieces of the last one that I was talking about with Jesse a little bit earlier. I hope we're not live. I'm dying here.
That's okay. But just generally.
Just general is like John was saying, is the stigma across the board.
Okay.
And one of those things that has opened up is employers are starting to look at how they can serve their people a little bit differently to keep them, to have their retention in-house. Okay. And not to have that turnover happen. So that's one of those pieces that I've seen starting to shift.
So this major dialogue that you've been at the forefront of, even though reluctantly because of your family issue, you have seen then employers be more willing to talk about this, public policy makers. And tragically, increasingly, you must get approached by family members who's saying, thank you because this happened to my fill-in-the-blank,
right.
Son, daughter, brother, sister.
That's the motivation to keep going, quite honestly, because as I said, you know, personally for us, we don't have that happy ending yet. But know, seeing the impacts on my hometown. First of all, the negative impacts, and today, you know, we're in a better place. Of course, we still struggle just like every community throughout the country does with addiction. But yes, we hear those stories. We get my staff gets phone calls on an almost probably daily, sometimes maybe weekly, a basis of families looking for help, or sometimes just looking for somebody to talk to. You know, that shared experience. One of the bills that we're focusing on is recovery coaches and a handoff to a recovery coach, somebody that's got that shared experience that can help you navigate, because these folks they have no clue. My background is I'm a health insurance agent, yet when I was struggling with Cassie's addiction, this is a very difficult process to navigate and to understand. So we want to be able to connect people to the resources that are available in our state.
Yep. Thank you, Representative, for talking about one of the specific bills in the package. Let's talk about that. A peer recovery coach does what, Peter?
A peer recovery coach is a guide toward resources or just a connection point. So if somebody is having an issue, they have that lived experience themselves, they can connect with that person personally, and then they can also bring them toward those resources. So it is often convoluted or confusing for somebody who hasn't been in the process before and how to get there. So what's available, how to get there, is what that resource is available, and we stay connected to them long term, and that's the objective, to be connected to that person.
And how would this bill in the HOPE agenda make that easier, make that connection for someone who has an addiction problem to connect with a coach? John?
Well, first and foremost, it would make it billable through Medicaid.
Okay.
To allow, I mean, the
it's
coverage,
not billable now.
It's not specified today in through our Medicaid programs, so that's a first and foremost a step. But then also, as I said, the warm handoff, making sure so you've got somebody. There's some times that a person is more likely to be able to be approachable to help them get into recovery. One of those times is when they are maybe they had an overdose event, or maybe they're in a health setting, a clinic or a hospital. Being able for the provider to be able to connect them to somebody who's got that shared experience, the recovery coach, to help them navigate the process.
How many other states reimburse on a Medicaid basis for, let me get the term right, peer recovery coaches?
I don't know the number.
Do you know, Peter?
If I remember correctly, it's about 25.
Okay, but it's certainly allowable under the federal guidelines.
We would need a CMS waiver, but we believe that it wouldn't be a problem getting that waiver.
Okay. Now that we're talking about the specific HOPE agenda bills, we've talked about the peer recovery and Medicaid reimbursement. Talk about some of the other major bills in this package, Representative.
Well, I mean, so there's peer recovery and the recovery coaches. It's definitely very, very important. But in addition to that, a lot of these pieces of legislation, there's seven, are focusing on what I would say are filling the gaps, the things we've learned, that you know, things that we've left, or maybe are on the more fringe that aren't, you know, immediately addressing things such as 911 Good Samaritan. While we passed it years ago, we actually passed it with a sunset, thinking that we'd, you know, naively, to a certain extent, that we'd be at a point where we wouldn't need this anymore. And this, the same with PDMP, requirement to use the prescription drug monitoring program, that had a sunset on it too. So here we are renewing those sunsets.
Well, talk about why the Good Samaritan law was important and still is important enough that you want to extend the sunset, sir.
So there's a basic premise, mindset, attitude that I've taken on recovery, and our goal as a state, especially when you look at it from where we are, even if some people can disagree, some people think addiction is a moral failing. There's all different other kinds of conversations we can have about that. I don't care where you come from in that spectrum. The goal should be, especially from an economic standpoint, I can make the case why these things make sense. From an economic standpoint, I can say that we're a state that's got very low unemployment. We need everybody being productive. Our goal is to get people from addiction, active addiction, to recovery, to long-term recovery. And part of that is work. Part of that is you know, ongoing treatment. You know, so there's a number of things in here that are going to have to be part of the conversation. Continuing the 911 Good Samaritan and the PDMP, a basic premise that I started this was the person can't get into that long-term recovery, get into the world of work if they're dead. And 911 Good Samaritan, we are seeing cases of that where somebody would overdose and they'd be left to die.
Now, Peter, prior to the show, you told me you've been in recovery for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
How important are Good Samaritans to
people that are now addicted and people that are still in recovery, such as yourself.
I think it's the same thing where we're just opening that door mm-hmm. for awareness and also building that bridge toward not getting somebody in trouble if you're connecting them toward getting care. If something's happening, you're able to make that connection a lot faster and not be afraid of what you're doing with that connection.
What made the difference for you to really have you determine, I want to get clean?
That's a big question. I think that there was an accumulative period of time where people had slowly reached into my world and had shown me kindness and that I was not alone. And those all kind of flooded in at once. And I saw that maybe I could be a different person and be free from the inside out. And I decided to start trying to do that.
You've probably heard a few recovery stories like that.
Yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, I mean, the positive outcomes are the ones that keep you going. The tragedies, are bringing you down, but at the same time keeps you fighting. And it's not uncommon to hear somebody like Peter that have lived that experience but now want to give back, and whether it be because somebody helped them through the process or whether it be because they understand. We need all those folks in the trenches helping, so I think it's a great relationship.
Let's come back to the alphabet soup term you use, PMP. PDMP.
PDMP is probably the most significant policy change that Wisconsin has implemented in this effort. Prescription Drug Monitoring Program was actually established, I think, under Jim Doyle, but it wasn't a requirement for doctors to utilize it. So the idea behind the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, I think all states have them now. For the longest time, Missouri was the only state that didn't, but I think they've passed it now. Where you go to the doctor, he prescribes you a controlled substance, he or she a controlled substance. You go to the pharmacy would enter that controlled substance into a database. Mm-hmm. So the next time you go to that doctor or another doctor, they see that you've gotten this controlled substance, so that they can be able to, understand your, perhaps maybe you're a drug seeker, perhaps maybe you've already got a significant, maybe you got other underlying, other prescriptions that could affect your prescribing. It has been a great tool. We didn't just require it. We built a system that I hear from the doctors that has revolutionized the whole process, and it's much less laborious than what we had previously, and because of that, they're utilizing it. We went from about 16-18% utilization to now we're, I believe, over 80%. We want to get to 100,
right.
But the idea behind it is understanding the prescribing history of the patient you're seeing before you.
Is this a national database with the exception of Missouri? In other words, if someone is shopping for an opioid, can they cross the line to Michigan, Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota?
There are, yeah. We have access to be able to look into other databases, do queries into other databases. If you're a snowbird, I live on the border of Michigan, we've got Illinois, we've got Minnesota, we can access that information, yes.
Have you seen this make a difference from your standpoint with boots on the ground, Peter?
Yeah, I think so. So we have two doctors on site, and both of them love it because we're able to see when somebody's coming in the front door what's really going on with them, who they have seen, and what's been prescribed to them in the Schedule II medication.
Please. So we have seen, it depends on what time frame you look at the reduction. We've seen between 20-30% reduction in prescribing of opioids in Wisconsin since we implemented the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program.
That's significant.
It's huge.
And the Department of Health database, which I just was at, said we have also seen a drop in the number of hospitalizations related to opioids, which is a question. Have we hit bottom with this? John, you've been on this for years.
I don't think hit bottom as far as the number of overdoses.
Yeah, have we hit bottom now?
I'm hoping we've hit the peak, not the bottom. I want a new bottom.
Thanks for the correction.
860-ish, I think, was last year overdose deaths in Wisconsin. That's still a large number, even though it's the first time we've seen a reduction in about 5 years. We've still got work to do, and nobody's going to put up a mission accomplished banner anywhere on this. But I do think the PDMP and the other tools we put in place, the treatment throughout the state, has helped. Yet, there's more work to be done. There is a piece of this that I think we need to talk about, and there's a piece in one of the bills that kind of addresses this mindset too.
Please.
We have, as a state, have never past any prescribing limits or anything like that for doctors. Mm-hmm. We've tried to give them the tools to better understand their patient and their patient's histories. But we haven't said you can only have three pills. Some insurers have done that. Some, doctors perhaps might be implementing those type of policies, but the state never has. ME Medical Examining Board has created guidelines. Yet at the same time, we do hear from pain patients who believe that the state has done something because all of a sudden now they're not getting the same medications that they got before. So we, rather than, necessarily continuing the conversation about prescribing more, I think what we want to do as a state is make sure that these folks have other options, non-addictive forms of pain management. We've already got, chiropractic and physical therapy as good options, and those are covered through Medicaid. But there's a third one that is not covered through Medicaid, and Pew Charitable Trust, who we've worked with quite a bit, has got a lot of research on acupuncture. One of the proposals is to make acupuncture as a pain treatment a covered service through Medicaid as well.
Mm. I'm going to use his term. Have we seen, because it's a better term than I use, have we seen the peak, do you think, Peter, as someone that's out there? Or maybe not?
I think we're at the peak. I think we are. I think it's going to change, though, and that's so this is a catalyst toward the change, right? So addiction's not going anywhere. Heroin today, meth tomorrow, alcoholism still the number one killer. So as far as any deaths from anything addiction-related, so just knowing that this awareness building platform is what I would think of this as, not of the, like, we're going to have another peak, right? This is one peak. What's the next one?
Right.
And there is other peaks still happening that are second.
And Peter's point is something I think we need to elaborate on a little bit too. So when we started this, opioids, hydrocodone, Vicodin, those became conversations over the kitchen table because these were affecting families throughout the state. Mm-hmm. Then heroin came in and much more, carnage kind of followed. So that was the original focus of the heroin and opioid prevention education effort. But we learned that it's not just heroin and it's not just opioids. And even if we're successful at eradicating those addictions, there's alcoholism. Meth is a significant problem in our state.
Right.
So we've tried to make the changes we're making as a state government, the investments we're making as a state government, fit all addictive substances in our state.
Well, Channel 3 locally just did a story that included the number of drug labs, state drug lab tests for methamphetamine, and it's so high. Is there a package in the New Hope agenda that deals with methamphetamine, Representative?
I wouldn't say it's specific to meth, but it is. It allows for that overall understanding that this isn't just heroin and opioids. It's alcoholism, it's meth addiction, and it's whatever follows. There's going to be some other drug that probably follows at some point in time that we're not even aware of today. It's a mindset change, I would say, more than anything. And, like I said, the initial round, heroin, opioid prevention, education. But I would say within the first 2 years, we recognized that we were seeing some improvements there, but it was moving to other things in some communities, and meth oftentimes was where it was moving to.
Yeah. We've talked about any PS on that?
Well, just looking for it's the culture shift, right, toward addiction in general, mental health, and really having that open door. Because those are very correlated, the two, especially with the use that's happening these days. So, and changing that.
Well, and to Peter's point, mental health is something we haven't brought up yet. But the correlation between mental health, a dual diagnosis, as they're called, so not only do you have substance use disorder, but you have some underlying mental health disorder that is actually making the addiction more likely. And, in my daughter's case, there was a sexual assault as a young person, and it's not uncommon to have that trauma in your life, and you're looking for something to kind of dull the pain of what you've experienced, and that's why addiction those type of folks are so susceptible.
We've talked about a number of the bills in the New Hope Agenda package, John. There's one other thing I want to ask you about. DHS was studied the availability of medication-assisted treatment for opioid use disorder in prisons and jails. Can you talk about that?
Sure.
There's a pilot program mentioned here, sir.
Right. So oftentimes, one of the things we're still struggling with is the whole detox.
Yes.
That is probably finding a pathway to make detox more readily available for people that are ready to get in the world of recovery. Unfortunately, are probably the number one detox facilities in our state is our prisons and our jails. So making sure that we have access to treatment within our county jails and within our prison system, I think is the main objective of this study. We do have some, and we do have some county jails. One of the last rounds of HOPE agenda bills, we actually provided a dollars for a pilot program within our county jails for a Vivitrol program. Which is Vivitrol is one of the three types of medication-assisted treatment, Suboxone, Methadone, and Vivitrol. And those are, I'm probably using the wrong terminology, but that's the kind of the names I've become to, there's more technical names to them, making sure those are all readily available within our jails, because something I've learned is not one is necessarily the right direction for everybody. So we need all of those available. That's the idea behind the study.
So the idea here is to make medication in jails and prisons more available.
Yes.
to treat some of these issues.
And at the same time, making sure that all prisons, all jails have access to Narcan, Naloxone, which actually would reverse the impacts of an overdose as well.
Okay, I want to talk about another bill in the package, John, and then I'll get Peter to react. Require DHS to create a registry of approved recovery residences. Why is this important, sir?
So it goes back to that medication-assisted treatment conversation. So I'm, you know, I have no background in substance abuse counseling or anything along those lines. I just work with people who do. Early on, we heard a lot from folks that it was abstinence only, but I think it's become widely accepted that this addiction is so significant that medication-assisted treatment is kind of the accepted pathway. We want to make sure that part of long-term recovery is stable housing, employment, et cetera. There are sober housing facilities throughout the state that are actually accepting Medicaid reimbursement that are discriminating against folks that are on medication-assisted treatment. They basically say, if you're going to be in our sober living facility, no
medication.
No medication, and that's a barrier. So this registry, it's more of a belief of the these different. A lot of these houses were formed with a AA type and an NA type philosophy, which is great. And we're not saying they can't be that way, but if they're going to be listed on this registry as being Medicaid eligible, they need to be able to be open to medication-assisted treatment.
Peter, this is an area that you've got a lot of expertise in, because WISHOPE operates what?
About 80 recovery housing beds.
80 recovery housing beds mm-hmm. in the metro area of Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And what would this change in this bill that the representative is hopefully going to get passed? How would this help organizations like yours, nonprofits, providing some residential or sober housing?
I think it's standardizing kind of that of what's to expect. So if somebody's offering a sober living, then people know what they're getting. So like you talked about discriminatory policies of people not wanting medication in there, and that happens a lot. So even co-occurring disorders, there's outside of just MAT treatment, there's still other psychiatric
MAT
medication,
is what?
Medication-assisted treatment.
Thank you.
So the Suboxone, Vivitrol, and Methadone. So when they're utilizing those pieces, they try to go into a recovery home, and they can't because they're saying, nope, we don't accept that here. But it also could be a psychiatric medication, a bipolar medication, depression, anxiety. So all those things are kind of discriminatory against. But we need to have a different pathway so that our citizens can find this care that they're looking for and know what they're expecting, you know what they're getting when they walk in that door.
You say WISHOPE operates 80 beds.
Mm-hmm.
What's the average length of stay for some of your customer clients?
Sure. Our program's a little bit different than some, but so we have a 3-6 month long and a 1 year long program. So it depends on how long somebody wants to stay with us, but it's typically about, it can go up to a year. Average length of stay is about 9 months.
What's your success rate?
That's a great question. I think when people ask that question, they're often thinking black, white, recovery, sobriety. But yes, we just talked about medication-assisted treatment, which automatically disqualifies someone from being black and white sober, right? Because it's a synthetic opioid quite often that they're taking.
Okay.
Over here, they might be taking a psychiatric medication or a depression. In some circles, that might be deemed as non-recovery orientated. So again, we're stepping on all of those beliefs and saying, let's open the door toward what is a better wellness path for you, this person. What is their path for life? We want to change that outlook of what success is and look at that emotional growth, that mental growth. And from there, if we measure that tool stick, from the time they step to our door front to the one they leave, I mean, we're touching it easy 85%. If you go to black and white, just sobriety, people go back and forth.
Yeah.
How many times does it take before somebody on their own volition starts to find sobriety? What's the average? It's 7.
He just outlined a profound shift in how to approach this issue. Do your fellow legislators and state officials share in this? Is there any significant opposition to your new Hope Agenda package, Representative?
Well, I think it goes back to, so we started this conversation talking about the stigma, and there's always going to be some who, as I think I've made the comment already, you know, an addiction is a moral failing, it's a choice. All those type of words are thrown around by some who don't truly understand. And I honestly might have been there at some point in time until you experience it, you know, that it's easy to say that.
You live it. Your philosophy changes.
Right. Well, not just your philosophy, but once it's more, it's learning, you know, I mean,
understanding changes.
Even once we originally, you know, struggled with Cassie's addiction, it was probably, a couple years in before I was able to have enough awareness of all the different things that make up addiction before I even change my mindset to 100%. But yeah, I wouldn't say it's ever going to be 100%. And with, we've been 30 bills to this point, all but one of them has passed unanimously.
And
that one bill was the 911 Good Samaritan, which had one no vote in both houses. So,
right.
You know, in this world, that's even one no vote in both houses is a pretty significant success. Do I think there could be some no's again this time? It's possible, but I do think that the main reason legislators have been as supportive as they have been on the Hope Agenda is because these issues are affecting their hometowns just like they're affecting mine.
Is the Evers administration backing this Hope Agenda, sir?
We've met with them. I mean, they're the physical health piece, chiropractic, the physical therapy, the acupuncture was in the budget and was vetoed. We've had conversations with them. I think that was more kind of tied around the drama of the budget per se.
Yeah.
But we've had conversations with DHS, and they do believe they're folks that are on the ground dealing with these issues seem to be supportive. I've been asked, you know, why not go for a veto override on that? You know, I'd rather be at the end of the day. I mean, you know, as I said, this is not a Republican issue. It's not a Democrat issue. When people call our office and are struggling with issues, nobody asks their politics. So at the end of the day, I think it would be best for us to continue on that pathway where these 7 pieces of legislation are passed through both houses, and Tony Evers and I are at a press conference with him signing these bills, and Peter and all our advocates, you know, signing these things in the law. That would be the best outcome for everybody.
Okay, we're almost out of time. 2 final questions. First one to you, Peter. If this package becomes law, what will it mean in terms of people like you who are treating and working with addicts and your staff? What will be the biggest changes if the new Hope Agenda becomes law?
So instead of looking for grant funding for some of the pieces, this is going to open that door wide open to peer supports throughout. So we have 37 peer supports. We'll be able to fund those all year long and be able to consistently do the work we're doing. In addition to providing that ongoing support to recovery homes and having more of an expectation and understanding of what is a recovery home in Wisconsin.
Okay. And then, John, final question, process question. When are these bills going to move? How soon? And do you want to get them all passed in the spring session next year?
Well, it's always the goal to get them all passed.
Right.
January, we're expecting to have committee action on these bills in January with the hope of them being signed into law by the end of this legislative session in 2020.
Okay. Representative John Nygren, Republican from Marinette, 89th District, a leader on the Hope issue. Peter Brunzell, of the Executive Director of WISHOPE. Thanks so much. WISHOPE will be following these bills.
Thank you.
Thank you both very much. Thanks.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civics broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol. Wisconsin Eye would not exist without generous donors like you. Please visit wisi.org to make a donation today.